Okay, thank you for staying with us. This is Craig Lubo, and you are listening to Radioactive Magazine on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. And we have today Spencer Graves, who is hosting the show. He's here in the studio, one of the guests, and I don't know who all of them are, we'll tell you in a second, is Tom Heffman. And as usual, keep in mind that the opinions you hear stated by any of the speakers are the opinions solely of the speakers stating those opinions and do not reflect the opinions of KKFI or its parent company, Midcoast Radio Project. Welcome, Spencer.
Oh, thank you very much. So I've got here on the Zoom session, structural engineer Ralph Jones is going to tell us what he thinks residents of Kansas, Missouri should do if they wonder about some structure building, if some structure building or bridge doesn't look right to them. I'd like to, before I do that, I want to follow up with a discussion had last week about COVID on last week's Radioactive Magazine. So KCUR this morning reported that Kansas City has a vaccination rate of only 37.6%. That's below the state average of 39.6, while Missouri and four other states are leading the nation in COVID cases, up almost 50% from the previous week. If you are not yet vaccinated, please do so to protect your families and your family and neighbors. If you are vaccinated, please tell anyone who will listen that they have a civic duty to protect others by getting vaccinated. I used the analogy last week of smallpox, which was eradicated by 1979. Some of the people alive today would not be here because they or their parents would have died of smallpox without that eradication program. Now to the advertised agenda. I'm pleased to introduce Ralph Jones, who is president of Structural Engineering Associates here in Kansas City, Missouri. He is a former president of the International Concrete Repair Institute. He has 41 years of experience as a structural engineer and over 35 years of experience in structural condition assessment, structural repairs, and forensic engineering. He is licensed as a professional engineer in Missouri, in Kansas, and in five other states. Ralph, thank you for joining us this evening.
Thank you, Spencer. It's my pleasure.
So we've all heard about the condominium that collapsed June 24th in Miami. We had something crudely similar here happen in Kansas City 40 years ago. Tell us about that.
Well, most of the people who live in Kansas City are very well aware of the Hyatt collapse, which occurred almost exactly 40 years ago. It'll be 40 years ago on Saturday. To this date, it is in terms of lives lost, it is the worst non-intentional collapse that has ever occurred in the United States. And as we, you know, as we think about this Surfside condominium collapse, I'm afraid it's going to surpass, eclipse the death rate of the Hyatt collapse. And I can't go any further without first reminding everyone of the terrible loss of life and the pain that is occurring in Miami right now, and as we did in Kansas City in 1981. And as an engineer, we typically go to the technical causes and we want to know why. But there's a lot of suffering going on right now as well. So, but the Hyatt collapse was kind of, the outcome of that was, you know, we found that there were several deficiencies that occurred and actual mistakes that occurred kind of more or less during the construction process. There were some changes made to the design during the construction process, and that led to increases in stress on specific members. There were also some questions about the inspections that were being performed. Were they adequate? Were they detailed enough? And it led to several changes in the Kansas City, Missouri, and the way the codes department managed buildings in Kansas City Missouri. From my standpoint, one of the biggest changes was that the city of Kansas City started enforcing very vigorously the requirement of special inspection during construction projects. The requirement for special inspections has been in the code since, I know, at least 1940. I researched that just recently, and it's been in there. And even prior to that, in the 1937 code, they had a requirement for what they called a registered inspector to be on site, and their sole purpose was to inspect work. And as a result of the Hyatt collapse, the Kansas City Codes Administration really kind of enforced the requirement for special inspection. Prior to that, it was still a code requirement, but the city, I don't believe, actually did such an extensive job in oversight of that requirement. But they've been doing it now since shortly after the Hyatt collapse, and it's a very, I won't say rigorous, but it's a very thorough system that they require now for construction on practically every building in the city of Kansas City, Missouri. Now, we have a lot of surrounding communities around us here in Kansas City, and they also have those similar requirements. They all have different procedural requirements, but I think the reader or the listeners need to understand that there is special inspection being performed on every project that's going up, and that's typically required party special inspector, and it's their job to make sure the buildings are being constructed properly.
With the word forensic engineering, just that's not a common term, I think. So why don't you just tell us just briefly what is forensic engineering?
Well, forensic engineering is basically just the study of problems in a building. Those can be pretty mundane to where you're just trying to understand why a problem is, or why a building is experiencing problems, and then it can go all the way to examining a failure, such as the Surfside condominiums. And, you know, in not too distant past, the World Trade Center, because people want to know why this happened. We want to learn from it to try and avoid problems in the future. We want to modify the way we design buildings if we can. We want to modify the way we maintain buildings if we can. And so a forensic engineer basically is just studying the conditions of the building, understanding what is leading to the problems. So again, in the case of the Surfside condominiums, there will be many, many forensic engineers that are going to be studying this. And their main focus is going to be what was the root cause and what were the contributing causes of the collapse. And then there'll be a lot of other people involved who get into the periphery of, you know, responsibility as far as social responsibility or legal responsibilities. But the purpose of the forensic engineer is to determine cause.
Great. Thank you. Is it fair to say that to divide problems into, as a source of problems, into two categories? One is whether the code is appropriate, and the other is whether enforcement is adequate.
Well, you know, from a forensics engineering standpoint, we don't get so much into that as we do the technical aspects. But code enforcement is certainly part of it in the analysis of, was the building designed in accordance with current codes? And codes change every few years, and they change to update our knowledge of structures and our knowledge of the materials being used. And so just because a building was constructed in 1940 doesn't mean it's dangerous just because it doesn't meet current code. But our codes are always being updated. And part of the forensic analysis is, was it designed to meet current code? Was it constructed in accordance with the code requirements?
Right, right. I remember reading some years ago that half of the bridges built in the 19th century fell down. John Roebling, who was one of the leading engineers of that day, designed the Brooklyn Bridge. He went out and studied the failures, and his bridges never fell down. Comment?
Well, we certainly learn by our mistakes, and we learn by other people's mistakes, but there's a lot of research going on across the country every day, analyzing failures, but also analyzing what potentially could be a failure. A lot of universities do research to study failure analysis, that where they will mimic structural members and test them and see what kind of load capacity they actually have. And analysis of structures is becoming more and more complex and thorough every issuance of the code.
Sure. Yeah, I remember as an engineering student at Kansas State years ago, I would always know I was in the civil engineering part of the engineering complex, because there would be these cans of crushed concrete.
Yes.
You know, there's so anytime there's anytime they use concrete, I guess they have to pour samples and they let them cure, and then they crush them to test the strength. Is that standard practice?
Yes, that's a very small part of what is done by special inspectors and inspectors on site and testing laboratories. But yes, that's very typical, that concrete samples are obtained during the placement of concrete, and as you referred to, they're stored in a certain environment, and then they're tested at a certain frequency. But that's just one component of what is being done, and it's a very, I guess, obvious or, you know, well-known part of it. But there's so many things that go on during the inspection process that's more than just testing concrete.
Sure, of course. So I'm thinking of our listeners here, and if they have questions or concern about a structure, is something safe or whatever, a building or a bridge or whatever it is, what do you recommend they look for?
Well, it's taken me a lot of years to understand what I'm looking at when I look at a building. And it's probably a little bit unfair to expect, you know, someone who's not in the engineering field or even necessarily in the repair and forensic field to see something and fully understand what that means. How severe is it? I guess my biggest advice to the listeners would be, if you see something that you are legitimately concerned about, best thing to do is notify someone. If it's your property, let's say you live in a condominium and it's your property, even if it's in a common area, the best thing to do is have the condominium board contact an engineer who's experienced in analysis and understanding of existing conditions and have them come look at it. I've been called a number of times commercial structures, and sometimes, you know, their concerns are really not well founded. The deterioration mechanisms I'm looking at or whatever are just not severe, and they don't have big implications on the structure. Whereas recently I was called by a client to look at a small structure, and I had to tell them that it should not be occupied until repair work could be completed. So it runs the whole gamut, but it really takes a good, clear understanding of how the structure works and how its capacity is diminished by the thing you're seeing. The other thing you can do too, let's say it's not your property, is the Kansas City Codes Administration. And I'll have to apologize, I keep referring to Kansas City, but that's kind of the city that I've had the most experience in. Kansas City, Missouri in particular. But I know, and I think probably every city codes department has a similar resource. You can contact them if you just type in Kansas City, Missouri dangerous buildings. You'll go to a website, and it gives you a location where you can, you know, report your concerns about a potential dangerous building, and then they will assess the condition and they will take appropriate action.
That's very interesting. Yeah, so and so I would say, by analogy with human health, okay, and longevity, I was reading recently that the increase, most of the increase in longevity and the doubling of life expectancy that's occurred over the past 100 years or just a little bit more, whatever, was primarily due not merely to advances in science, medical science, but to citizen activism that convinced the politicians to actually clean up the water and that sort of stuff. And so I think, if I'm hearing correctly, some of the increases in strengthening of the code and strengthening of enforcement is precisely due to people going out in the street or people contacting their elected officials and saying, hey, we need to worry about these things. Comments?
Yeah, I think that's probably correct. And, you know, most of this starts at the politician level, and then it's implemented by the codes enforcement officials. And one thing, I may diverge a little bit, but one thing that many cities across the United States have is a facade ordinance, which requires inspection of the facade of a building, whether that be brick or terracotta or whatever the face of the building might be. And they've done that out of a reaction of a catastrophe. New York and Chicago are probably the most notorious, where people have been killed walking down a sidewalk when a brick or a piece of terracotta or stone falls from the building and hits them. And many of the facade ordinances that have been placed across the United States have been a result of someone being injured on the sidewalk. And to date, the city of Kansas City, Missouri has not invoked an ordinance for facade inspections. And that is disappointing to me as an engineer.
Mm-hmm.
Disappointing to me as a citizen that has worked and lived in the Kansas City area my entire life.
Yeah. Do we not have as many brick facades and terracotta and so forth as New York and Chicago?
We do not have as many buildings, certainly, of New York or Chicago, but we don't have nearly as big a population either. And we have a pretty good inventory of buildings of a time period that could be potentially dangerous.
Yeah.
And there's a number of buildings that have had brick or stone or terracotta or glass fall from them.
In Kansas City.
And we have been lucky that no one has been injured.
Yeah, there. Really, where would one go to get an inventory of incidents like that? Is there data on that, or
there's probably very few that have been reported.
Yeah, right. Most of them do not get reported.
Right.
Right.
Documented, right. But they exist.
What would it take? I mean, so if you could scan pictures and look for irregularities, I'm just trying to brainstorm. I'm both a statistician and an engineer, and so I'm just trying to think, could we write an algorithm so that we could take a certain kind of picture of an exterior structure and look for irregularities where a brick is missing or something, or a piece of terracotta is, you know, looks like it's broken off or something?
Yes, I think you could. However, again, it kind of goes back to the, you know, analyzing structures to determine if they have a severe deterioration.
And so it would be a great project for a grad student in engineering or something, right?
It would take some time, and sometimes what you can see from above a building, say on the roof of a building, is completely different than what you see from the sidewalk.
Sure. Well, of course, they've got drones now that they can fly out and take pictures of the side of the building fairly easily, and if you write the right kind of software, you could potentially find those things. Do you know if anyone has done that kind of stuff?
I know that drones are fairly routinely used in the condition assessment of facades.
Mm-hmm.
And with the correct drones and the correct pilots, you can get very meaningful information.
Yeah.
But I personally, in my analysis of facades and buildings, I don't like to rely solely on a drone because I like to be able to touch it and see, is this a surface crack or is this something that goes through the substrate of the facade?
Right.
And it is very helpful in kind of identifying locations that need further investigation.
Sure.
This is Craig. I've got a question. On the drones, wouldn't the vibration from the drones potentially cause more of the bricks or whatever to fall out?
Did you hear the question?
I'm afraid I did not.
Okay, so the question was if we have a drone hovering outside a building, wouldn't the vibration from the drone possibly induce a brick to fall?
I don't believe so.
I think that probably the vibration is not big enough. It's not actually touching the structure. So,
that's right.
Right. So yeah. Well, that's I find that very interesting. So. This discussion reminded me of in 1986. I changed planes. I spent a night in Mexico City in December of '86. It was like about 14 months after the earthquake there in what was it, October or so of the previous year, and the city was still a pile of rubble. Okay, and 5 or 6 or 7 years later, I talked to a somebody, an engineer, I think, Mexican engineer, and I asked him what percent of the damage to the structures there were to structures that were not built to code at the time that they were built. And he said 95%.
Yeah.
I trust we're nowhere close to that here, but it sounds, we don't have all the answers from Florida yet, but from some of the hints that I'm, reports I'm reading, some of the stuff, there were some questions of code violations and so forth. You were talking about, you talked to me in the preparations for this about certificate of occupancy. Talk about that.
Well, one thing I think that we were discussing at the time, Spencer, was, you know, if a contractor is doing some incomplete construction, or he's cutting corners, or he's not doing something he should do, then what is the recourse for, say, the owner? And ultimately, of course, the owner can refuse to pay the contractor. But during the course of a project, since we have special inspector, the special inspector's responsibility is report to the City of Kansas City, Missouri Codes Department, or whatever city we're in. They report any deviations or mistakes, whatever you may say, to the Kansas City Codes Administration. It is then the responsibility of the structural engineer to either say, this is okay, it needs repair, or you must do this, or take it out and replace it. It's up to the structural engineer of record. That's part of his responsibility to make that decision. Until that item is resolved, it's an outstanding item with the Kansas City Codes Administration. So until that is signed off by the special inspector and the structural engineer of record, the city will not issue an occupancy permit. Of course, that, you know, if the owner is aware of what's going on and takes action, their biggest recourse, of course, is just to not pay the contractor for that work.
Right.
You know, there's always potential litigation and everything that goes along with that. But the codes department in each city is monitoring the buildings that are going up, and it's up to them to issue the final occupancy permit. And without that, an owner cannot open the building. And typically, if the owner can't open the building, he's not paying for the building.
Right. I remember some 25 years ago or 23 or whatever, I was talking with a guy who got a PhD in forensic engineering, and he had attended conferences that where the structural engineer who was to blame for the bridge that collapsed at the Hyatt Regency spoke. And he had apparently been licensed in several different states. He lost his license in Missouri, but I think in not all the states that he practiced. But he said he was certainly very contrite in his presentations, saying that not a day goes by that he doesn't suffer from the harm that he caused to others. Right. So, okay. Well, I think we're getting close to, we got 3 more minutes. What do you think the most important things you'd like to leave our audience with, Ralph?
We started the discussion with, you know, what should someone do if they're concerned about a building. I think that the most important thing that all of us can do is not become complacent with what we see. In other words, if we see something, we should probably take action. Now, obviously, you know, you see a little crack or something, that's nothing to get excited about. But as things progress. If you see something that really concerns you, don't let it go. You know, report it, take some action, take care of yourself, take care of the others. I think the second thing, worst thing we can do is get too reactive to this and think that every building we're walking into is going to collapse. We have a very good inventory of safe, stable structures in the Kansas City metropolitan area. So just for our listeners, don't react much to this. This is a rare occurrence, a very rare occurrence.
The comedian would say that they're all going to fall down, but probably not in our lifetimes, right?
that's right. And then probably the third thing is if you do need to really do an investigation on a building because of some concerns, make sure you hire an experienced engineer in that field. The one thing you don't want to happen is have an engineer come out and not understand the situation that could be dangerous. The second worst thing is probably to have an engineer come out, not understand what the situation is, and react to something that's really not a problem. So if you find yourself in a position you need some professional assistance, make sure you do enough research to understand that the person you're going to have come out knows what he's doing.
Okay. So thank you very much. I think we've been talking with Ralph Jones, who's president of Structural Engineering Associates here in Kansas City, Missouri.